Mark's dick ain't free. Helena's looking at him like his body is cheap, but he's never made it to an NBR meet and greet to eat boiled eggs at Kier's feet. Mark's dick ain't free. Living in captivity, put him in the vicinity of sudden dilemma. Gemma telling him he's all she need. Evidently all Mark seen was goat people in a cold harbor stream. Mark's dick ain't free. I mean, baby, you really think you can make a baby named Jamie without Mark's Audi knowing a thing while also laying next to an Egan seed? Hell fucking no. Mark's dick ain't free. He needs his wife in a Red Bull, not a waffle party in a gold thimble. Bullshit, milk chick at the door knocking. Let him in. Who's that? Helena's accomplice and best friend. Mark's dick ain't free.
The phone up in the silver side of the prosper. I went to spy the Jamie Egan, drop your notches. Cut the watch and take to any and how they mock in the dark. How did you know? Watching politics with people less fortunate, like the battle within herself. Oh, we don't have this game. Not only style, shall know.
Mark's dick ain't free.
Welcome back, Audis and Innies, to the Midlife Hour. It's me, DP, back again with my best bud, Bob Arcadian.
Yeah.
We're excited to explore the strange surgical beauty of Severance, and today we've arrived, finally, at the season 2 finale, Cold Harbor. And it does exactly what the show does best. It asks questions that don't have easy answers, turns identity into a battlefield, and it reminds us that even in the coldest, most sterile spaces, humanity still finds a way to bleed through. This episode broke me in the best way. It's about sacrifice, fractured love, and the terrifying power of choice when you finally understand what's at stake. From the gut-punch intimacy of Mark and Helly's moment in the dark to the unsettling comedy of Robo Egan and Milchek's late-night show-era energy, Cold Harbor swings hard and lands every hit. So let's talk about it, scene by scene, beat by beat. We're going to deep dive into the camera work, the performances, the existential gut checks, and yes, that line, yeah, but I want to live with you. Take it away, Bob.
At the beginning of the episode, it starts off with Marques waking up in the cabin, right?
Correctamundo.
Any Marques.
The convergence of selves.
Convergence of selves. I like that. He has a camcorder in his hands. And we see personally, I just want to say this real quick. That scene between Mark that I'm about to talk about and his Any went on too long. They could have cut that in half. They could have. It was like 20 minutes of the same shit. And I get it. It's the first time they talk to each other, but it could have been cut in half. All right, that being said, he has a camcorder in his hand, and was it Cobell or Devin that asked him to watch the tape?
I think it was initially Devin.
Devin. And she's like, just watch it. And when you're done, Cobell told him, go to the balcony and watch it. So then he does that, and he's probably out there all night, would you say? At least?
At least a few hours, right?
And then we get to the conclusion that any Mark might not help him, that he has his own agenda. I mean, he deserves to feel alive, want love with Helly, and whatever else. What was your take on that?
Well, first and foremost, what's the actor that plays Marques, who's in Parks and Rec? I always forget his actual
Adam
name.
Adam Scott.
Adam Scott. What I thought was amazing about the performance, particularly in this sequence, was the way they portrayed the dual communication between these two entities that are the same person with vastly different personalities. And I thought Mark Scott did a great job with his facial acting, picking the two individual persons. Even when it came down to the manipulation of the camcorder, you know, the Innie was like a little confused or a little hesitant, not sure exactly how it functioned versus Audi Mark, you know, he picked it up, he turns the screen, he goes straight for it. So even those little details were accurate to these two identities talking to each other. I can kind of agree that the moment went on a bit long, but I think that was necessary to give you a true feeling of the roller coaster, right? Because it starts off with a lot of mystery, a lot of confusion. These two have never spoken to each other. They've shared the same body for 2 years and I've never had an interaction. And so you had to go from that awkward moment of like, hey, it's me. To, hey, we should do this. Yeah, we should do this. To like, no, you don't give a shit about me. Like, you're trying to use me. So I think how long the sequence took was necessary to really convey that these are two different individuals. But yeah, I get it. What else do you think about that scene?
Cobell was looking good. Patricia Arquette is looking kind of thinner.
What are you going to do for the next 2 years until the season 3 comes out without your girl,
I'm gonna
Patricia?
Watch Little Nicky. Stigmata, and what was that movie she was in on Hulu not a movie, but a TV series where that little girl, she played the mom that kept the little girl sick. What was that called?
I don't know what you're
true
talking
story.
About.
Like a happy place or some shit. It doesn't matter. What does it lead us to the next scene?
Well, just touching on that, what I found most interesting, right, is like the existentialism that the any version of Mark was feeling, right? Like he may not exist, even if these two do reintegrate, like he narrated or said verbatim, you've lived twice as long as me or 20 times as long as me. So how much of any Mark would be the personality of this reintegrated Mark?
Yeah, he's going to get like a pinky of his personality.
So even the idea, like even amidst like all the terrible things that the Innies have experienced and all the mystery and all the awkwardness, like Mark would rather continue to go through that to be with Helly and his friends than to simply not exist. So I thought that was quite interesting.
And maybe to take down Lumen from all of the shit that he's been seeing as far as Miss Casey, the goat people, that goat lady, what was that, episode 3 or 4? She was ready to kill him. Are you here to kill me? She was about to beat his ass.
What I think is great about how that sequence ended was with any Mark giving Devin his ultimatum. But like, the next place I wake up better be back in on the severed floor, you know?
And then boom, he's back on the severed floor.
And so to me, like, you know, obviously they didn't show or depict what that conversation looked like with Devin, Cobell, and Audi Mark, but I imagine that being a very tense situation, right? I bet you Audi Mark is like, no, like I'm going to bring this motherfucker back. Like, I'm not done having this conversation. You know, he wants his wife back. But the reality of like, no, like, don't call his bluff. You know, he may sabotage this all. So that was interesting. Next, we talk about Dylan's return to the severed floor.
Dylan, return to the severed floor. Yeah.
I thought you had something else to follow up on the back of that. That Michael Jackson-esque.
No, that's being sick the past 3 days.
I'll bring us in. Mark pops back. Elevator. New painting. Huge painting. Awkward painting.
Oh, yeah.
It's depicting him finishing Cold Harbor. And everyone's there, from Cobell to Milchek to all the characters we've experienced thus far, to the background characters, people in different departments. We're depicted there. And he's greeted by lights. Lights directing him. But Helly shows up. They have a brief moment to embrace and talk about what they've experienced, because they've had these big revelations, right? Mark dealing with his Audi, and then Helly coming face to face with Egan.
Dealing with his Audi and the reintegration process. But then as soon as they start walking around in that bitch, they get that Mr. Robotnik Kier that's made out of his wax, whatever the fuck he was made out of. That was a creepy little thing. And that's him, isn't it? That's him in that animatronic.
No, he's definitely not in it.
Who was talking to Milchick?
I mean,
then,
the voice from the voice box. Yes, of course. Okay. I interpreted what you're saying as like there's a person inside that fake shell. You know what
I mean? Oh, no. I think it's Kier's consciousness that's in the animatronic, because he was able to like crack wisecracks at Milchick like easy. What did he say? Something about him using big words again. And Milchick put him in his place real quick. It's about time he has some balls.
100%. But just before that, you know, because that was all part of Mark's completion ceremony of Cold Harbor. But prior to that, there's a really cool moment between Mark and Helly, you know, the last two remaining of their department, kind of having a conversation and then kind of discussing like what it means to, you know, follow Audi Mark's plan and sacrifice everything and the potential for them to be cease to exist. I thought that moment was both filmed brilliantly, the way that the lights were down low, the framing up close on each other's faces, and the fact that the light selection, the colors of the lights were very minimal, right? And then the delivery of Mark's lines, but I want to live with you. One, it was touching. Two, we haven't had a lot of those moments, but it almost reminds you about the innocence of the Innies, right? Because they haven't really lived these lives. They don't have these great of experiences.
I found it childlike from Innie Mark to do that, after knowing what he knows about Gemma being inside of Lumen and trapped and everything.
But that's,
as an adult,
that's kind of my point, though, because he is a child.
Yeah. He has the mind of a child. You're right.
And so that's what I found endearing, is it's a reminder, right? Like, he is only 2 years old, right? They have limited experiences from which to base their decisions. So what is going to influence you the most? Whatever butterflies or feelings of attraction that you have for Helly, it was accurate to who that character on the inside is. That's why I liked it.
You want to talk about Dylan?
Go for it, homie.
I actually thought that little note he wrote to any Dylan, Audi Dylan wrote, was very mature, very well said. And I respect Dylan a lot more from that last encounter that he had with his wife from in this episode because shows he's trying to man up. He's trying to take things serious.
You know what I think is hilarious about that whole interaction? Well, I do agree with you. If we go back a couple episodes ago, I feel like there's been a couple times throughout this season where Audi Dillon's wife's relationship with Any Dillon has been a point of contention, at least of differing perspectives between the two of us, where I've had a very different perspective maybe than most people. So to me, it was almost like validation that my assessment of what severance is and these two individuals being the same person, what that means. And I said all along that I didn't think in a sense that it was cheating, that it is the same individual. It's just different compartmented parts of the same person. And I think that's where that maturity comes in from Audi Dillon, you know, when he talks about like, you know, I'm not really good at things. I've always kind of been a fuck up, but the fact that
I'm a bum,
that Any Mark has been successful, you know, that he's confident, that he has all these things that he's not. And then the fact that he broke it down, he's like, we're the same person. So it makes sense that we would have the same view.
Wants and desires.
Well, not just wants and desires, but like appreciation of the beauty of his wife. Right. So it all made sense. I thought that was a great way to handle that. The fact that Dillon was surprised that
Absolutely.
He was back in the first place and that it wasn't a punishment, right? It was almost like a plea. Audi Dillon was pleading with Any Dillon to remain, to continue to exist. So I thought it was great. I thought Mr. Milchick's reaction to delivering that note, and he says something to the effect of this may get embarrassing, and he fucking takes off running out the door very abruptly.
Yeah, that was funny. That was really funny. I think the whole Audi Dillon sending Any Dillon back to work, though, that's going to play into the theories that we had a few episodes ago, talking about how Innies are going to be permanent. Just my 2 cents.
I don't want to dive down that hole just yet, just because I think it plays into some of my theories about where the story may be going in season 3. But let's pin that one. Let's not let it go.
Pin it. Put it on the map, on the map board.
So I was a little bit confused, I'm not going to lie to you, as Mark continued to finish the process for Cold Harbor. Maybe I wasn't paying attention or I was too busy writing notes, but I must have missed something because I was under the impression that if he completed Cold Harbor, it would be too late to save Gemma. So the whole time I was like, what?
She dies.
I was like, why is this motherfucker still completing the goddamn...
So in the beginning of the episode, when Cobell says, I need to talk to Mark alone. And when she's talking to him alone, she says, when you finish Cold Harbor, you need to immediately go down to that hallway. And that's when he said, I know where it's at. Or I think that's when the timeline was. But he's like, we know where that's at. So, I mean, that could be it, right?
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. What I thought was cool is that last little embrace that Helly and Mark had as he finished the last file. And she's like hovering over his hand. And she says, at least it's a happy one. Because like we learn that from Cobell with her conversation with Any Mark inside the birthing center, that the way that the files work is you get a feeling or emotion or one of the tempers. And each one of those tempers are associated with the person who's experienced the severance, in this case, Gemma. And that's why you get those feelings. And when you recognize them, you can categorize them and then you can compartmentalize them or destroy them, allowing the birth of a new
and apparently up to 25 times.
Yeah.
That's fucking insane that you could split someone into 25 different personalities. Like, what?
I mean, that poor woman. You've been living all these years on Earth with at least 8.
I'm a Gemini. That's not true. That's just life. That's our astrology.
So they finish Cold Harbor. Mr. Milchick makes his grand appearance. I thought it was great that they kept the lighting low still. They use a spotlight just like it is a late night show. You see that big old Mr. Milchick mustache and smile. And I thought he acted that entire sequence very well. Especially the interactions with Egan. I know we briefly touched on it already, that they kind of have a little back and forth. And then Mr. Milchick has some retorts for him, right? He comes back. He doesn't let him slide on some of his little slick talk, Mr. Robo Egan. I mean, calls him out about his height, you know?
Yeah, like you're actually like 4 feet or 4 inches taller than you actually are as this robot. Thank you, Mr. Milchick. That's what makes me think his consciousness is uploaded into that. That's what the revolving is, isn't it?
Maybe. I just interpreted it as... Helly's dad was just voicing him from somewhere else within the facility.
Can we talk about Helly's dad for a quick second? You're so fucking weird. You're so fucking weird.
Yeah, that was a great...
And he comes in. I hate my daughter. I used to see Kira in her, but it went away a long time ago. And then she tried to attack him, right? And then there he is. Now, so I think...
Yeah, she was ready to... Another she one. Was ready to murk that mofo.
She was going to murk him. And see, I don't want to talk about the end yet because I have my own theory about how the end happened. But... Is it going to be a permanent Helly now since he hates his daughter?
I don't know. I don't want to. That's part of that pin conversation that I just don't want to jump into yet. But I did find that interaction a little fascinating. The fact that he almost appreciated the severed version of her more so than his own real daughter. And just maybe it's the lack of filter that Helly has with him, calling him weird, you know, being willing to resort to violence. But what I thought was even more impressive is the fact that he just like said his piece and walked away. Like he didn't even care that she was armed. He didn't call for guards. He didn't plead for his life. He's just like, this bitch ain't gonna do shit. And then just walked away.
Well, he wasn't gonna get any guards anyway. I'll keep a lid on it for right now. But we know why.
We know why.
Oh.
How do you feel about the card that was in Egan's hand when you open it up and it's like that little cardboard waffle on the plate? I thought that was a great touch.
So I was telling my wife, we're going to get a waffle party this episode. And I thought we were about to get one. I was almost right. I was halfway right. Halfway.
What do you call it? Choreography and merriment. They had like a full HBCU marching band in there tearing it up.
That shit was so dope. Getting down. It was so cool.
Yeah, that sequence went on way longer than I thought it would. They just let the music continue as it progressed into the little fight between Helly and Mr. Milchick as Mark scrambled away to go save Gemma.
She busted his ass open with a trombone. Was it a trombone mm-hmm. or a sax or something?
Right in the face.
But I tell you, Milchick got some moves, man. We saw it on Defiant Jazz. And then we've seen it again last night. The dude he can move his shoulders.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
He knows how to do all that shit.
Do you want to bring us into Mark's act of bravery? Any Mark's act of bravery and how that commenced? I thought it was really cool, just that whole fight scene with the HBCU marching band and, you know, Dylan ultimately joins Helly and they got the big vending machine blocking Mr. Milchick in. But all of that was an effort to give Mark enough time to escape away to find the dark elevator hall to begin his journey to save Gemma.
I saw Deion Sanders at the HBCU halftime show for Severance last night. Did you see that shit?
No.
Jacksonville State, baby. Jacksonville State.
So tell us about that journey, Mark's journey to find Gemma.
He runs into that lady from Roseanne. And, you know, she's just not that nice of a lady. She looks like Joy Behar from The View.
Jesus Christ. All right. Are you forgetting the episode? Are you just going to skip over the whole him in the hallway getting into a fucking fight? The fucking
oh,
ghost?
Shit.
The
oh, fucking, yeah, yeah.
Like, dude, what okay, are you doing, dude?
So he runs into the hallway. And he starts to see the Cold Harbor room. And it just brings it again. I have no idea. I'm telling you, I've been sick. My brain's not working.
All right. So given Mark enough time to run away, and we see him following the directions that's written on that handwritten note to find that corridor with the elevator. He comes to that corridor, but Mark's access doesn't open the door. He starts to try to scale it, climb through a vent. But what's simultaneously going on, unbeknownst to him, behind him, in a room that doesn't have any physical door frame, is
Mr. Shithead Drummond, and he's now slamming him into a wall with one arm, which honestly looked fake as fuck. It didn't look like there was much pizzazz or oomph in that shit to throw Mark into the wall. Whatever, I'll look past it.
Yeah, but he took a break from the goats before, you know, even going after Mark, and we finally kind of got a sort of answer as to the goat's purpose?
I don't know. Because for me, I don't know if they were going to load Gemma's brain into the goat. Was that what they were going to do?
No, but I mean, they don't explicitly say anything. But from my interpretation is that the innocence of the goats and their sacrifice has something to do with facilitating or cementing the severance process. Because he said the whole goal was to cease pain, right? And we'll circle back around to that because we see, you know, Gemma, while she's down in the basement going through this final act after the completion of Cold Harbor, she enters into a room where the crib that she had purchased when she was, she and Mark were preparing to have a child before the miscarriage.
Yeah, fuck these people,
is set
man.
Up and in the room. And it's the only thing in there.
These people are so evil, like legitimately so evil. Like, how could the fuck? But I guess you got to see if it works, right? And the only way you can see if it works is if she builds the damn crib.
Well, it made sense, right? Because just prior to that, Mr. Drummond, when he's talking to, I don't even know the goat lady's name, but he says that the goal of Lumen or Mr. Egan's goal or ultimate purpose is to end pain. And it immediately cuts to Gemma approaching that crib. So what was her ultimate pain? The loss of that child, right? And they're using the severance process as demonstrated with the birthing centers to separate people's minds from their trauma. So what greater way to cement or demonstrate that Gemma has successfully gone through this process than to present her with her greatest trauma and see if she recalls any memories or if she is blind to it and just completes the task.
And she completed the task, but It was interesting. I thought the goat lady was going to kill Drummond myself. I didn't think it was going to. Mark can't fight for shit. Can we just say that? Is he the worst fighter that you've ever seen?
Do you think he's a better fighter than Audi Mark, though?
I think Audi Mark's going to be drunk and just not feel shit. And he's just going to beat his ass, dude. That's more than likely what's going to happen. Any Mark took one little fucking and his ass was almost down and out from Drummond.
But again, it calls back to he doesn't have that much experience, right? 2 years. And none of that has been violent encounters. Because I was thinking to myself, too, just kick this fool in the nuts. Like, he's going to be out of breath here soon, Mr. Hefty.
Don't let it go 60 seconds with that.
But what I found most fascinating about that point in the episode is that's where the gears shift, right? And I know I've been a Debbie Downer on Severance Season 2 as far as the pacing and the lack of answers that we got throughout the early episodes. But I thought it paid off in this finale. In this moment, this is where the episode made a turn. We've been going through heavy dialogue, lack of action, a lot of weird, strange conversations, very, very slow pacing, not a lot revealed. You were getting like single character episodes, and the tone has been very muted, whether it's the color choices for the scenes and or the props and the colors that are distributed. So when they start fighting, we have two different things. We're no longer in this world where it's about dialogue and things are slow, but they're strange. It's about action. And the second thing is that there's blood. We've seen a very pristine show, with the exception of Mark when he's in his own residence. This world that they live in is very sanitized. Everything's in a very particular place and order, minimalism, you know, everywhere. And then there's violence and it's chaotic. The camera angle shift, the way they are filming the show changes, and the blood, the bright red blood, is a stark difference to what we've seen throughout the entire season. So I thought the pacing of everything in the beginning of the season really paid off because it made everything else impactful as far as this journey, these fights to save Gemma.
Can we talk about how Drummond died for a second? Because that was some cold shit.
Motherfucker, you just listened to me say all that stuff, and I could tell by how quickly you said, can we talk about how he died, that you didn't listen to a single word I
listened
said.
To all
you
of
didn't
it.
Listen to a single word
but I'll tell you
said.
What. But I'll tell you what. It was so good that I just agree with you. I have nothing to defer.
You're just in agreeing because you don't remember what I said.
I remember everything you said.
What did I say?
You said that when Drummond got hit with that thing in the neck from Audi Mark in the elevator, that was so crazy because fucking any Mark is just like, don't fucking move, don't move. Then it's bloop. And then as soon as he wakes up, trigger finger what easier than chicken
he's,
pox.
He's like, now, in a second here, my Audi is going to what?
Yeah. That fool had that shit coming.
That was
dude.
Great timing.
Fuck Drummond.
Yeah, imagine being Audi Mark, and that's how you wake up with a fucking bolt gun in your hand and a man bleeding profusely from his neck.
Imagine being Gemma, and that's who shows up to fucking rescue you.
Well,
as a dude covered in blood.
It actually makes sense for Gemma, for Audi Gemma, but not her severed. Severed Gemma is either a G
is
or a rider because she didn't. It didn't bother her at all.
It makes me think that Cold Harbor wasn't a success in the way of. She still went with him over the voice on the intercom, which was Dr. Maurer, who, if she didn't have any disdain towards him from all the shit that he's done, because she shouldn't remember, she shouldn't have went with Mark.
Maybe that's indicative of some of the inefficiencies or incomplete process of severance that they're still going through.
Could be.
Or it's just one of those like love trumps all type tropes, you know?
I hope not.
Which is less interesting. So Mark saves any Gemma from the Cold Harbor room. She's already completed disassembling the crib, convinces her to defy the voices in the room, instructing her not to engage, interact with him. And she steps out. As soon as she does, it's Audi Gemma seeing her husband for the first time in 2 years, and he's covered in blood.
Covered in blood. Another man's blood. I don't know what that means, but it's not good.
What I thought was most interesting is when they get back in the elevator and she switches to Miss Casey and he switches to Annie Mark.
What's happening here, Mark?
Yeah.
Because they were kissing?
The calmness of her voice, like it's almost...
Almost like she wanted to do that in the past. And
that's not the way I interpreted it.
Hell yeah.
No. Oh. Her voice was so... There's no inflection to it. It was almost as if Miss Casey has been programmed to feel nothing. So I interpreted that completely different than you. I felt like Miss Casey genuinely was like, what's going on? And has no emotional attachment or perspective on anything.
It's fucked up for Gemma being outside of that building. Crying for her husband and not realizing maybe that he's severed too, and that he does. That's not really your husband. That's your any husband.
Yeah, that part was it's the complete opposite, right? Like Gemma, Gemma trusted Audi Mark, and then they switch swaps swap places once they get to the stairwell, and Mark pulls a fast one.
I say that to say the doctor told Gemma that Mark had started another family and had a daughter. And now that she's on the stairwell looking in and he chose another woman over her, who's to say that she's not going to believe that doctor?
But he didn't, and she knows that. She knows that that's any Mark. Audi Mark didn't choose someone else. Any Mark did.
We'll find out season three. Because I'm not entirely sure she's aware that's any Mark.
I'm 100% sure she's aware that's any Mark. Miss Casey, Gemma, she's the one that's been there, who's been going to these different rooms, who's been severed all these different times. Her Audi has been within Lumen. She is more aware of Lumen's capabilities than even Audi Mark, right? So she knows that that's not Audi Mark. That's not her Mark. That's his.
Still heartbreaking, though.
Oh, absolutely heartbreaking, right? But I don't think there's any confusion as to whom made the decision.
Which proposes my next question for you, sir. You saw after Mark broke her out of the room with the crib that she was disassembling, Amy Egan, Blaina's father, saying, "Oh, fuck." Mm-hmm. Then we get to the scene where he lets Gemma out to the stairwell. And Helly, after saying, "This is like our last time," by the MDR screens and whatever, all of a sudden shows up and yells, "Mark," and just looks at him. Is that Helly or is that Helena?
I think it's Helly. But I think throughout this season, we've seen some indications that maybe Helena has been envious of Helly and maybe not so thrilled with her own life or position as the heir to Lumen Industries, and may almost be willing to give herself up to her any. So what we pinned earlier, my theories and projections, is like, how long does this last? So there's chaos going on within the facility. We know Mr. Drummond's down. Mr. Milchek is eventually going to be able to get out of that damn room. But how long will they be free? Will the innies be free roaming within Lumen? Will they be able to take over? Is there going to be a big insurrection with the assistance of the HBCU marching band, right, to kind of run things? Because I think that's what's required in order for the innies to have any substantial amount of time as their full identities. They have to remain within a severed space.
I think for me, it was like, if she's showing up like that, Helly was never cruel, right, Irving? That was kind of a cruel thing to do while you see someone's wife after you already said, go with her. You already said that earlier in the episode. Then you see her crying and pleading for him through the door, and you still say Mark, and then you run away with him. That's a pretty cruel thing to do to somebody. But like we said earlier, they're childlike, right? They don't really have the time or hours in to really know what compassion would be. Or have any kind of morals?
Well, I think that's the entire question. Like, any Mark owes no allegiance to Gemma, right? That's Audi Mark's wife. The whole point is him staking a claim to the person that is, you know, their body. Like, he has desires, he has goals himself. And yes, he has now saved Audi Mark's wife, but that doesn't mean he's willing to sacrifice his own identity. So I don't even know if it has anything to do with morality other than further cementing the fact that they are different people with different goals. Season three will pick up maybe a year or months after this entire incident.
And I hope it's not over a year.
In which there's some downfall of Lumen and with Miss Cobell and her assistants, like maybe all these characters now have switches, handheld switches, where they can switch to their Audi in any, wherever they are. And that's how they share.
Okay, that was my point that I forgot earlier because I've been sick. Sorry, guys. But Woo's Hollow, right? It was Audi Helly in there with the innies. And he said, Glasgow Chamber, whatever the fuck Milchick said. Mm-hmm. And it was all of a sudden any Helly. Well, if you look at this episode, Drummond's killed. Milchick is nowhere to be found. It's only an old man in that place, and Jamie Egan. He probably has a code word.
And the two security even though he guards. The two other workers in the basement.
Which really isn't shit, though, is all I'm saying. And if you need backup, you're probably going to have a safe word for your daughter that you have going down there to bring her back, whether you hate her or not. So I think it might be Helena, and I could be wrong,
That's actually a great theory. That is quite an observation there, Bob. Now we're fucking...
Because why would you want Mark S. to escape?
Now we're cooking with grease. It's...
Okay.
It'd be a great fake out, right? Like Mark thinks that he's running away with Helly to have a grand old time, and gotcha, bitch.
Now it's time for it to be reprimanded and disciplined, because
there was a moment where I thought maybe season three would be just Gemma trying to get Mark out of this.
I wouldn't even watch that shit. I'd have gave it two episodes, man. That's it.
No, but I think your idea is a little more intriguing, right? That Egan, my only hope is to switch Helly right now. She can convince Mark to stay. Huh? That's
because how's he going to know the difference in all that chaos?
He wouldn't. He's been tricked before because he's a child.
Exactly. So, I mean, that's just my theory, but
he fell for the candy in the van, the free candy in the van
and the free McDonald's.
Yeah. And the free something else underneath that desk in that abandoned office.
What are your predictions for season three? How is it going to play out?
My predictions for season three is that it doesn't come out for 2 to 3 years.
It's not going to be another COVID and hopefully not another, a writer's strike?
Yeah.
Hopefully.
I did see that it was renewed, but, you know, given the current climate of things, things always change. Severance is one of those weird shows where the writing is important. I don't necessarily think it's a main project for anybody, right? I don't think they anticipated it to take off as it did. And it's Apple. Apple doesn't mind taking years off between seasons for their shows. So, I think it'll be 2 to 3 years before we get season three.
I'm going to give it one. And I really don't have any other predictions other than that, because the season finale kind of left us with a lot to just open up to for season three. So I guess we'll just see how it plays out, you know?
Yeah. And to be fair, I don't know about you, Bob, but I only gave this thing one watch. So I've only seen it once.
I'm going to watch it again tonight, because while I was watching it, I had a crying baby, and that takes away from a lot of the dialogue, if you know what I mean.
You need to get a severed chip in that boy.
Never doing that. No Neuralink, no nothing. We hope you guys enjoyed the Mark's Dick Ain't Free song. A fan mail sent us that. We thought it was pretty good.
Yeah. Check it out on all streaming platforms, or hit us up in the comment section. Ask for a request of a download link and we'll send it to you. So, as always, we appreciate your attention and joining us as we break down the season finale of Severance Season 2. If you agree with us, if you think we're a bunch of dumb people with not a lot of critical thinking skills or review skills, tell us that too. It's been swell. See you next time.